Hey everyone, welcome back to the Fun Indian Guy podcast. This is going to be like a second satellite podcast we are going to have because I'm super happy that the first one worked out well, and that's why we are doing a second one. And today I'm sitting in Dapoli and I'm having conversation with my friend Venu Gopal, aka Venu. He's sitting in Chennai right now, so it's gonna be super exciting. I know Venu from Milano because we studied at the same time in Politecnico di Milano. When I was studying service design, he was studying urban planning and policy design. Very interesting course. And after finishing the course, he came back to India in Chennai and started working. And he's working in a very interesting sector because he's working along with the government, along with the local municipality and all those organizations, and doing amazing projects. And just to give you context also of the today's episode, that Chennai is reinventing a lot of things when it comes to urban mobility. So it could be commuting, it could be walking, cycling, all those things, even the bus stops and all those area, they are trying to reinvent it, redesign it, and coming up with better solutions because they are using creative minds like Venu and his colleagues and bringing all those different perspectives when it comes to creating new sorts of solutions for urban landscape. And they have been doing crazy amazing projects in Chennai, and because of that the pollution has decreased, overall well-being of the people and the kids is getting better, and it is showing amazing results. And those projects are really catching my attention, and that's why I wanted to bring Venu, because he has been part of all those projects and many others of similar kind. And that's what we're gonna talk about today, how they are taking these creative ideas and trying to implement it in urban sector, especially while working with the government organization, which really is amazing. So that's why I asked Venu to come on the podcast so we can discuss this. So thank you so much, Venu, for coming on this podcast. It means super a lot.
Thank you so much, Suyog, for the lovely introduction. It's great to be on your podcast finally. I still remember, I think one of your very first videos where you were super excited in starting the channel and kicking things going. So I'm so happy to see that the Fun Indian Guy has come a very long way, and very happy to be on your podcast and to catch up.
So basically, when I picked up a camera and started making videos in Milan, Venu was there. So we used to have such conversation because he's also quite interested in the field of making videos and taking pictures. So we used to talk about all these ideas like 3 years ago, and now we have came so long way, and now we are catching up on this interesting topics. It's really amazing. So Venu, I would like to ask you to give our people who are listening or watching to this podcast some small introduction about yourself, like where do you come from, what you have studied, and what do you do?
Sure, sir. Hi everyone, my name is A.V. Venugopal. I am an architect and urban planner. I currently work as a senior research associate with the Institute for Transportation and Development Policy in Chennai, the ITDP. So what we do, if I were to put it in a nutshell, is that ITDP works as a global nonprofit organization. We work with cities across the world, and many cities in India as well, wherein we provide technical expertise, technical assistance to various city governments and related stakeholders on sustainable transportation projects, policy interventions supporting these projects, capacity development works for the city officials, different stakeholders in the city, and also a lot of research to back the work that we do. So I have been working extensively in Chennai, thanks to Suyog for summing some points up, over the last year and a half. I've been working with various stakeholders in Chennai to basically ensure that the streets are much more safer for the pedestrians and cyclists in the city. So yeah, Suyog, that's about what I do in general.
Amazing. So now we are going to begin this podcast and ask Venu a lot of things about his projects and what kind of things he has studied as well in Milan and why he chose to come back. And then also we will try to cover a small topic of how the world or how the urban canvas might look like after this whole virus situation is over. So very excited to get his perspective on this topic. So let's go and begin the podcast. Hey people, I'm Suyog, also known as the Fun Indian Guy. I'm a service designer, musician, and a filmmaker. I really love to talk about design or creativity with super duper amazing people. And that's why we produce this podcast, so that we can share this fun together. So let's begin by asking Venu his journey not from the childhood, but basically from the moment you decided to go to Milan. So you were studying architecture and then you decided to go to Milan to do this urban planning and policy design course. So what was that transition about? Why did you do it? And then how was your experience in Milan studying this different course?
Yeah. So basically I did my architecture from NIT Calicut in Kerala. And as an architecture student, we used to travel a lot. We had a lot of study tours, a lot of site visits. So every chance we got, we were out in the field and exploring the city and the states. So this sort of gave me a lot of freedom and exposure to see the different cities within Kerala, across different states in India. And the more the time that I spent on the field, the more I realized that my inclination was more towards the urban scale of projects and the challenges that are there on that side, and lesser towards the other spectrum of finer details in things like interior design, product, or architecture itself. So when, as an architecture student, when the professor used to give like sites to design a project on, you have defined boundaries of a plot size. And you are asked to design something within that and to have just a broad understanding of what is around it. But then when we went on site to understand the challenges, etc., I was strongly looking at the challenges around this particular site in the neighborhood itself. And that is what used to strike me a lot more. So for example, if you look at the streets or the neighborhoods, you have a lot of people complaining about issues of potholes in almost every road in every city. You have people complaining about the garbage dumps in many areas, sanitation, plenty of issues. And people complain about things that the government are doing, the things that the government is not doing so well and whatnot. But then my interest was in understanding that there is so much to do in these areas, but then there is so little that is being done. A lot of people question all of this, but not many do much about it. But at the same time, what sort of pushed me to pursue urban planning was also the kind of stories of people who are doing something on this field. Like, for instance, in Kerala, you had the Kudumbasri initiative, which was partly supported by the government. You had a lot of residents, welfare associations, a lot of individuals themselves who had stepped up, and they were doing commendable work in identifying what these urban challenges were, sort of breaking it down and finding solutions to it. And that is beautiful because these solutions were not just for one generation, but it would go on for many years altogether. And these solutions had a very large impact than what probably a smaller level of intervention could have had. So all of this sort of pushed me towards studying urban planning eventually. So after working for a few years as an architect in Chennai, I decided to pursue my master's in urban planning and policy in Politecnico. And yeah, that's how we ended up meeting as well.
Awesome. And yeah, that's a nice starting point because you wanted to get into a different kind of profession where you're working on the problems which are happening around, which are not a very obvious stream or obvious domain for architects. So I really like that you wanted to pursue this kind of approach, and that's why you chose Milano, and Politecnico actually had a course which was about this. So it's quite interesting because oftentimes what happens is such problems could be solved from top down or bottom up, and bottom up is a very nice way to solve urban problems or problems in any town or a village, because people sometimes, not sometimes, most of the times know the problems better. But then you need facilitators or people who have certain sort of professional experience in the field who can make it happen. So I agree that it was an amazing decision for you to take your architectural knowledge and go to Milan and study this new kind of a course which can make you enable a lot of things and change. So how was your experience in Milano learning this course? Like, I as far as my experience was, it was quite interesting and exciting because I got exposed to a lot of new things and new ways to look at things. So how was it for you when you went to Milano and studied this particular master's?
Thanks for that question, Suyog. So yeah, the course in itself was extremely enriching. I would say that it did not have any defined boundaries as, you know, what urban planning itself should be, how should cities be designed. But then Instead, the course and the professor sort of raised a lot of questions for you to think, and you in turn came with a lot more questions, and it was a lot of discussions, a lot of research, and that sort of opened up many new possibilities, many new ways of looking at cities and the stakeholders and how to solve challenges, etc. So it was a great exposure, and more importantly, the kind of cross-section of students who come to Polyme for urban planning and even most of the courses is so diverse that you have stories of urban issues coming in from different cities from across the world and different solutions that these cities are using to solve these challenges in you know, their own ways. So that was an extremely great learning, I would say. And more importantly, I would say that what I fell in love through the 2 years of the course was the love towards walking and the love towards cycling. Be it with friends that I travel with, I've done a few trips with you, I've done a few cycle trips with some of my classmates. We always used to use the public transport in a city that we went to in probably somewhere in Europe, or we used to walk around the streets and explore the neighborhoods, and there was sheer joy in that. So even in Milan, you would remember that I was doing a part-time job as a food delivery boy for about 8 to 10 months as a part-time job. And even there, it was about cycling from point A to point B, dropping off a package, and for about 8 to 10 kilometers a day. And it sort of developed a sheer love for cycling itself in me over the time. And in conversations with other peers from Netherlands or Copenhagen or any country you take, you realize that in all of them, they have this quality of love for walking and cycling since their childhood. You have people from all cross sections of the society. You have people irrespective of age, gender, whatever position you hold. They happily walk to work or cycle to work. And that is a very beautiful thing that I learned. And yeah, I would keep that memory as what Polyme was.
Yeah, because it's quite interesting, no? Because when we go out to Europe and we travel, we see so many small things happening in city, and we think like we should also have it in our country, because these are simple things like using bicycle or just walking around, and we are not so used to it because the automotive or like the scooters and bikes are so readily available that for some purposes, yes, you do need a motorbike, but we get so used to it. And our also culturally, we are so used to it that even to go to like 100 meter distance, we just take like a scooter and go. But when you pay attention to such problems and try to enable different things, when you promote walking or when you promote biking and you make facilities to do that, people will try to do it, because right now it's a cultural phenomena. We have to break it and make them see benefits of the other thing. It's not like they don't know about biking, but when you show that you could bike possibly, then like this enabling thing is very important. As per as what I think. So basically you finished the course in Milan, and then I think you were for some period of time were looking for some jobs in Europe as well as India, but then you decided to come back to India. So what was that decision about? How did you take that, and what made you come back instead of taking some sort of exploration in Europe for a bit and then falling back?
So the decision at that point of time was basically a lot of questions I was asking to myself, as you know, which is the path that I want to go ahead with. So the choices before me were quite clear, either to look for an opportunity in the particular field in Europe itself and wishfully wait for a job to open up, or to look at the umpteen number of opportunities and challenges that India itself had on this front. So in the previous example that I told you about how the learning experience in Polyme sort of grew the love for cycling and walking in me, on the other end of the spectrum is India, where none of this is actually enjoyable. You have road fatality rates, which are extremely high in almost every Indian city, and of which pedestrians and cyclists sort of top the charts. Tamil Nadu, for instance, used to, you know, top the country for road fatalities. And it's a nightmare for even, you know, a normal daily wage worker to commute, risking his or her own health, using a cycle to go 10, 15 kilometers to work. You have parents, you have relatives of mine itself who used to say that, you know, they would love to send their kids to school on cycles, but they sort of fear their safety, and hence they say no, and they end up, you know, sending them on the school bus. So that's the kind of situation you have in India, where walking itself is unsafe for even women at night because of multiple reasons. So you have all of these complexities that India has. So the question then was whether to take a leap of faith, whether to jump right in and to see if you can support in improving the system, support in, you know, finding a solution to these challenges itself in Indian cities. So I think the second reasoning sort of strongly ringed a bell in me, and that's what led me to back to India. So I had been following the works of ITDP for quite some time, and an opportunity opened up and I was like, why not? This is the right door for me, and I made the decision to come to India.
So that's why you came back and you got to work with ITDP, which is Institute of Transportation and Development Policy. Okay, I got that name right. So how is this organization working? Because it's quite interesting to see an organization working with talents and the government at the same time and doing projects in the context of or a domain of a city. So how is it working with them, and what kind of projects are you guys doing in Chennai or also in the rest of the world?
So like I mentioned briefly in the introduction, we are basically a global nonprofit based out of the US with offices in China, Africa, and a few other countries. And in India, we have been working more closely with the cities of Chennai, Pune, Ranchi, and Delhi recently. And it's been about 20 years in India for ITDP, and it's been a very long journey about when you talk to city stakeholders about the need for prioritizing people and pedestrians over cars and private motor vehicles. So it's extremely different challenge when you try to work with city officials to make them understand the need for prioritizing pedestrians and cyclists and public transportation over private motor vehicles. Because unlike the case that I mentioned earlier about how in European countries, irrespective of people's income or social status, they walk or cycle. But in India, you have a status symbol that is attached with private motor vehicles. But at the same time, for cycling, it's sort of, you know, looked down upon. It's only recently that the recreational cyclists have sort of, you know, popped up in different parts of the country. It's been a long journey for ITDP in the country, and Chennai today is positioned as one of the lighthouse cities in terms of sustainable mobility, and is an inspiration for many cities across India to look and learn from, and even Pune as well, where in 2014, Chennai was the very first city in all of India to adopt what is called as the non-motorized transport policy, the NMT policy. So it basically is a policy which states how the city prioritizes its people and the pedestrians and cyclists a lot more. And it mandated that 60% of the transportation budget of the Chennai Corporation will be for non-motorized transport initiatives. So that was a very big paradigm shift for the city and the decision makers at that point of time. And since 2014, Chennai has gone on to create roughly 150 kilometer plus safe and walkable complete streets across Chennai. We had initiatives like car-free Sundays, which is basically blocking a stretch of a street on a Sunday morning next to the beach, and having all kinds of activities for kids, elders, all age groups. And to basically portray how public spaces can be and how when people can reclaim these spaces back. So that had been successfully going on for many years together. So in November 2019, one of the milestone projects of the smart cities in Chennai, the Pedestrian Plaza project, was launched. And this was launched by the Honorable Chief Minister of Tamil Nadu. And this was an extremely important project and a milestone for the city of Chennai, because one, this was located in the heart of Chennai. It was in a neighborhood called Lasithi Nagar. It was a commercial stretch with a heavy shopping character. The street was the Pondy Bazaar area. And this 1.4 kilometer stretch of street had basically shopping facades on both sides. It used to have extremely narrow or hardly any walking space for the shoppers and pedestrians, and you had a lot of buses, a lot of vehicles, a lot of parked areas, and a lot of dead spaces all over the space. And what used to be a very pleasant and memorable shopping memory for probably the great grandfathers who used to take their kids in these streets earlier, over the years had become a very unsafe, a very polluted, and a very disturbing shopping experience itself. So this project looked at, you know, rebringing that earlier image of Pondy Bazaar, and a large amount of the street space was reclaimed. There was roughly 7 to 10 meters of footpaths on both sides that was reclaimed. The traffic was much more channelized, and today the project is completed, and you have a lot of activity and increased footfall in the area. You have areas for elders, for parents, for kids to come spend time to, you know, play with their kids and whatnot. So the transformation was an extremely big milestone for the city, and we were doing some initial studies on the responses of people, and we were surprised to see that the responses were extremely good, wherein we had on one side women telling that, you know, they were spending more time on the street right now because they felt it was much more safer, there was better lighting, there was, you know, better access to the space. You had parents who were telling that they felt much more comfortable to let their children play in this area because they felt that, you know, the vehicles wouldn't just barge in, and they felt it was much more safer. So these stories sort of fueled the conversation and the initiatives that the city was already doing. And from this spark, the city decided towards the end of 2019 that it would take its street transformation initiatives a step further. And it would start this project called as the Mega Streets Project in Chennai. So this was launched in January 2020. And what this project looks at is basically 6 different neighborhoods in Chennai, wherein top consultants, designers from across the country in India will come, take each neighborhood, and they would design streets and neighborhoods which are much more safer and usable and enjoyable for pedestrians and cyclists. So this is a project which is in the pipeline and will see light very soon. So at the same time, there are projects which are promoting bicycle sharing, basically. So you have bicycle sharing systems that have come up in Chennai in different parts. So that is promoting the use of cycles. You have other technology and other systems which make the whole experience much safer for people, like parking management systems, which has been piloted in some parts in Chennai. This is basically an online app for anyone in a vehicle to use to find where they can find a spot for parking. So a parking management system is being rolled out in Chennai as well. So the story is quite similar in Pune as well, where Pune has done extremely well in creating streets that are much more enjoyable, safer, and vibrant for the people. And there are many such cities across India who have realized that the importance of sort of humanizing these spaces for the people is extremely good. The benefits that you get from this is extremely great. So that's basically what we do in short.
Cool. It's very interesting. We will put the link of the website down below, so people who want to see it visually, how it has transformed, can just click the link and see the picture, so it's you can see it better. So when it comes to problems in a city, usually people just go and try to fix the problem by a temporary solution. Like if there is something wrong with the like a footpath or something, they're just gonna go and just fix it and not like redesign it or reinvent it or repurpose it. And that's a very common way of approaching problems in a sector of cities and towns and villages. But when you bring such creative organizations in and try to think about the problem in more deeper sense, because it's not only about solving the problem, but it also has to do with the cultural aspect, the context of the place, the psychographic of people, how people think about the place, what are the emotions of people about that particular area. It's very important to consider all these things so that you can make or redesign or create a better solution which like matches everybody's expectations and creates a nice harmony in that environment. And that's what you guys are doing, and it's quite interesting to see. I'm curious to know, like, how is this dynamic working? Like, you have architects and creative people in your organization doing stuff, and then you have to collaborate with governments and people from bureaucratic systems. So how is this relationship building up, or how do you do things in between these organizations?
Very good question there, Suyog. So we do not work as a urban designer for a particular project. So the streets that were transformed that I mentioned earlier in Pune and Chennai and other cities are basically works where a particular urban designer or architect comes on board and they do the designing itself. Where we come into play is in sparking the need for doing such projects itself to ensure that a solid scope of work is there for the corporation and ensuring good consultants are brought on board in ensuring that the process of doing this design is done well. So that is where we come in. So we have been doing this through multiple tools. Capacity development has been one strong angle wherein we conduct workshops for various city officials and city engineers in making them understand the need for creating such spaces in the cities. And once they understand the need for prioritizing people, then it's about telling them and, you know, making them understand how to go about designing it. So we do a lot of research to back the work that we do. So we have publications which speak about design standards on how cities can go about setting up institutional structures. If they want to oversee such projects, how can they hire good consultants to come onto their teams to support the work that they do? And once they have the system in place, how would they create a network plan itself for the city from a planning perspective? And once they have a planning tool for the city, a network plan for walking and cycling, how will they go into the finer details? How can they as engineers work with architects in ensuring that the standards for safe walking and cycling is developed? So we have developed these standards, which was adopted by the Ministry of Housing and Urban Affairs in mid-2019. And all 100 smart cities across the country are currently following these design standards. And Chennai had sort of contextualized the standards based on their learnings over the many years. And Chennai, the Greater Chennai Corporation, had adopted these standards from their side itself in January 2020. So on how to design and even how to implement, how can implementation be done well is something which the practices look at. So this is where we come in from the technical side of things, of looking at best practices from across the world, understanding what is it that works well for India, bringing the city officials and engineers up to speed on how to do it, and then supporting them through the process from conceptualizing a particular project to ensuring good designers are brought on board, to ensuring the implementation itself goes well, which might require us to, you know, do design reviews or, you know, spend more time on the ground to ensure implementation is done well. And once the project is implemented as well, to be part of monitoring and evaluating if the project is being maintained well, is it meeting the initial indicators of success that it started with. So this whole process is something that we're involved in. And more importantly, like you mentioned earlier, the importance of involving all stakeholders in public projects is extremely critical. So we come in extensively in situations where we need to have consultations with residents groups or with the shopkeepers or the different stakeholders in the city. So we help in finessing these dynamics and in ensuring that the project runs very smoothly.
Cool, because this is quite interesting. As you have tried to, or you have put in a place, a system which works with taking all these people together to solve problems, you have kind of created these benchmarks and legends for other cities or other municipalities or other governmental organizations to see that, okay, it is quite possible and there are projects which are done. So it leverages also other people to bring in such organizations in their bureaucratic systems and make change or bring new projects or look at the existing projects in a very different way. So I feel very, like, it's very inspirational to see it happening, because most of the times you see such examples from abroad. Because I also took like this course called Temporary Urban Solution, in which I studied a lot of case studies across the world where people started to do stuff in their neighborhood, could be top down or bottom up, where people gathered in their neighborhood and started to act on problems and tried to solve it. But then that time I couldn't come across too many examples from India, and now seeing your organization or you guys doing such work and changing the traditional approach of governmental organization is quite impressive. And I hope this grows and we see such changes everywhere. and I'm quite hopeful.
Thank you, Suyog, for that. Just to add to the earlier point that you rightly mentioned, we in India, we've been following this approach of inspiring, creating, embedding and expanding, which is what you brought up as well, rightly, that there is a need to inspire the cities to start taking initiatives on this front for making it safer for pedestrians and cyclists. So once that inspiration is sparked and the interest is there, then it's about creating examples on the ground, or be it policies or implementing projects like the pedestrian plaza one that I mentioned. And once you have something created, then it's about ensuring that it sustains. So it's about embedding it in the system through strong policies, through budgetary allocations, etc. And once you have that momentum going, then it's extremely easy to expand, because the success of a project that's created is already seen and tasted by the people and the city, and hence you'll be able to expand it across the city and the state. And as you rightly pointed out, even other cities will sort of, you know, look up to the cities like Pune, Chennai and others who have done good work and want to replicate this in their areas as well.
Yes, it's super great, and I'm really looking forward to seeing more and more projects coming from you guys and such similar organizations to make change happen. As we promised, or as we mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, that we will also reflect on this virus situation from a perspective where you stand, from your context of being urban planner, architect and also a policy designer. How do you look at this issue, and what is your point of view that when everything resolves and we come out, what do you think about that situation? Because it's also going to be a very big cultural or a very dynamic problem in itself, because it has the economy, healthcare, culture, everything embedded in that one particular scenario.
An extremely critical question, and this is something which is being widely debated in most urban planning and city planning platforms, and even within our organization, of how things are going to change after this. And for instance, the cholera epidemic in the 19th century, it was after that the urban sanitation system itself, you know, the importance of it came a lot more into light. There were building standards for better ventilation and lighting that came in some countries because of how the situations in slums were causing issues of respiration and respiratory issues, etc. So even this pandemic has been an eye-opener in many senses. And if you were to look at the only possible silver lining in this unfortunate situation that still prevails, is the fact that the pollution levels have gone down extremely in most cities across the world. You would have come across many examples online already, where from cities in China to cities in India, be it Pune, Delhi, Ahmedabad, or even Chennai, the pollution levels have come down by 40-50%. The air is much cleaner right now. And you can even see the memes that are going out around that, you know, the air is so cleaner that you can see this, you can see that right now. But to look at that issue more seriously and with a more critical eye, in India, probably a few months before, about 20 of the 30 top polluting cities in the world was in India. And we would all remember the horrific stories of the pollution and smog in Delhi, wherein if you were to spend a few hours outside on the street, it was equivalent to you smoking probably 5 to 7 cigarettes or more. So that was a kind of state that most cities were leading to. And that's not the kind of happy state that we want to be in. So the silver lining has been about how, when the different activities were kept away, the cities have shown a new light altogether, how pollution levels have gone down. So I deeply hope that once things are back to normal, on one side, the decision makers in the different cities will relook at the priorities. Even the citizens like you and me will relook at the choices we make. From the citizen or the decision makers' point of view, from the many conversations and issues that are coming up from the pandemic, there is a need to prioritize and provide for the basic essential services for the people. So that is something that has come up very strongly. Healthcare, access to the different essentials of shops and other facilities is of need. Something which most cities are trying to figure out is how the transportation sector itself will be after the pandemic. in multiple cities in China, for instance, the cycle share systems have come back to life. There are a lot of people who are finding it more comfortable to cycle from point A to point B. You have public transportation systems which have undergone a different facelift, wherein they are ensuring frequent cleaning of the services to ensure the services are much more frequent, and people are using them. So India will also have to chart out a very robust plan of how these transportation systems will be coming out later. But I sincerely hope that the cities in India will also learn from how the pollution levels have dropped, how the air has become much more cleaner, and question why has it become so? You know, what is it that caused this difference? And once they start questioning so, they will be able to understand what is it that they need to prioritize. That they need to prioritize modes of walking, modes of cycling, public transportation, and other mass rapid transit systems than prioritizing motor vehicles. And there are plenty of measures which cities across the world are using to curb the use of private motor vehicles and to promote public transportation, walking and cycling. And it's a high time that Indian cities will also take initiatives on this front, so that probably next year you wouldn't read a news where the Delhi smog is a concern anymore. You wouldn't read a news where in Bangalore you don't have kids who are having breathing trouble. So that is what I'm hoping for. So while the government relooks at its priorities of providing healthcare and other facilities essential for the different cross sections of its people, the way it looks at transportation itself is something that it needs to change. And this is a very good milestone which might create that shift itself. However, on a different spectrum, there are also conversations on how city planning itself should be. The very basics of city planning, of how dense neighborhoods function much better, because even now, because people are walking from your house to buy groceries, a person who has a shop quite close is at a much more comfortable space where he can go buy something and come back. Whereas if you don't have access to those facilities and services, it's a nightmare, it's difficult. So it's basically reinforcing some of the very basic fundamentals of how city planning should ideally have been. So there is a lot of opportunity for India, you know, once things get back to normal, of, you know, ensuring that these basics itself are addressed. At the same time, you have this important new area of data that has opened up. Data was an area which many cities in India were already stepping into, but with the stories of the various contact tracing initiatives that were being done by multiple cities in Kerala, widely, for instance, you have the value of having granular and small-scale local data for cities supporting extremely in their decision-making. From an urban planner's point of view, data is something which is lacking heavily in Indian cities. And having that and the importance of collecting that will, I think, increase multifold in the years to come. I think the city has realized the importance of that with this pandemic once more, and I think going ahead that might be a game changer itself.
Right. I completely agree with you, and there is so much there are so many possibilities and a lot of potential building while we go through this, because there's so many things which could be done. In my previous podcast, actually, I was discussing the fast fashion and slow fashion and the sustainable fashion topic, and that time we were mentioning that maybe we should use this time to put down principles for ourselves, so that when we get back and start buying stuff, we know what sets of rules we have set up for ourselves to follow. For example, we'll buy only this type of clothes, just sustainable clothes made locally or something. So if you put down such system now, use this time to set it up, and then when you go out and apply that could be very, very helpful. And I see a similar potential in having this kind of a, not a toolbox, but like guidelines to follow when you restart your city or when you restart your city life. And if the bureaucrats or if the decision makers have such things to look at the existing problems and to begin when everything goes back to normal on sets of rules, it will be really amazing for them to also follow, because there's going to be a lot of things they'll have to deal with to establish the equilibrium again. I think we covered most of it which we wanted to, and I'm super happy that it was very, first of all, very interesting for me to see all these hands-on experiments, hands-on projects and case studies you guys have been doing. So thank you for sharing with us and giving your time to be here on this podcast. and share such amazing knowledge with us.
Thank you, Suyo. Yeah.
No problem. Thank you for giving us the time, because really it was really wonderful. So what kind of things would you suggest to us to read or to watch or to go through to get some more knowledge or information on the topics which we discussed today?
Yeah, so it's an extremely interesting field, and for those of you who would like to read more about it, I would recommend you to start with our ITDP website itself. It's itdp.in, and we are basically already churning out a few blogs on this context of how the pandemic itself is impacting our cities, how it's impacting the transportation systems, the way that urban planning itself should be done, of how the pollution stories have been across multiple cities in the world. So like you rightly pointed out earlier, it is extremely critical for cities to have probably a kind of a checklist which they can contextualize and see how to restart things once things are much better. And this is something which a few think tanks like us have already started putting our minds into, and I think it'll be a great place to start with to follow these articles, and we keep sharing other links of other such ideas that come up on our Facebook and Instagram and LinkedIn pages as well. So I think following them will give you a fair idea to start with.
Perfect. And where all can we follow you or see your work? Could be LinkedIn, Instagram. What are the profiles we should look for?
Yeah, so if you, I think both ITDP and myself, we have our pages on Facebook, Instagram, as well as LinkedIn. ITDP's official website is the one that I mentioned earlier, itdp.in. So we post updates, ITDP posts updates on all platforms, and you could follow the works and the research, etc. on these platforms. And if you'd like to reach out to me in person, you could probably drop me a message on any of these platforms, preferably LinkedIn, and I could share more details with you in any of these.
Perfect. So thank you so much, Venu, for taking our time once again and giving us such amazing information. It means super a lot to me, because I just called you last week to ask if we can do this podcast, and then we set it up and we made it real. So I'm very thankful for your time and all the information you gave us.
It's been a pleasure, Suyog. Thank you so much for having me on board. It's been really impressive that, you know, despite the lockdown and the difficulties of logistics to make things happen, you know, you've put your mind to it, and It's been great to see how your podcasts have been churning out over the last few years. So it's been an honor to be on your podcast. Thank you so much, Suyog. Looking forward to more of your videos as well.
Yes, it was really my pleasure. And yeah, I wanted you to come on the podcast very long back, but then you moved to Chennai, and then we couldn't talk much. And then that time we were not doing such satellite podcasts. So now we have the opportunity and we just made it. So super happy about that. So basically, that's all from this podcast, people. Thank you for listening to the podcast till the end. Thank you for watching our beautiful faces while we discuss this amazing, interesting topics. Means super a lot to us. And by that, if you have stayed till the end, I would appreciate if you go below in the comments and type I walk from A to B. Like, it's just a line. You just type I walk from A to B. So if you type that in comments on YouTube, then we know that you stayed till the end and watched the complete episode. And it's just fun to see who stays till the end while the content is so long and there are so many other options you could be listening to or watching to. So that is a very interesting experiment I'm doing for last couple of episodes. And there are few people who stay till the end and type that. So do that if you stayed till the end. And take care, stay safe, and make best out of whatever you could possibly do in this quarantine time. And I read this amazing quote the other day, which was quite interesting. It's a pandemic and not a productivity contest. So don't worry if you are not doing everything and making it happen. It's okay to just chill and relax and refuel yourself during these days. That being said, don't forget to have fun, and I'll catch you in the next video or a podcast. Ciao, ciao. Podcast.